Match Fit USA. Welcome to the Match Fit USA podcast. Here is your host, Jason Davis.
Welcome to Match Fit USA podcast number 7. Jason Davis with you here another week. Thank you for checking out the blog at matchfitusa.blogspot.com and the podcast here. Things are getting bigger and better every day. You guys know that my tagline is examining the state of American soccer. It's a bit of a dry tagline, but I do like the sound of it, so I'm going to stick with it if you guys don't mind. You know that I'm not always quite that serious, but the podcast is an effort to look at all of the different issues that are surrounding American soccer in the week past and looking ahead to a certain extent. And in that regard, something happened yesterday that doesn't happen too often for soccer fans on this side of the pond. Someone of world renown in the footballing community has connected himself with MLS, albeit just in a light, fanciful kind of way, but I did think it was worth talking about. Jose Mourinho was in the United States yesterday to promote the World Football Challenge, a six-city round-robin tournament featuring Chelsea, AC Milan, Inter Milan, and Club America that will take place here this coming summer as a preseason tournament for those teams. It's getting a lot of play in the football, soccer fan community, just because those are some of the biggest clubs in the world. I did want to take a look at what Mr. Mourinho said, both in his press conference and on some MLS and American soccer subjects. Let's just start off with a question that is often on the mind of American soccer fans. What is the level of football in the U.S.? Mr. Mourinho replied, "I've been quite impressed. I lost a game with Chelsea to an MLS team. They lacked precision but showed enough quality. I think it's good for American football when some of the boys play in Europe, and they're playing every week in the Premiership, in the Bundesliga. Their inclusion is good for them, good for the U.S. national team because they go back to the national team and bring the experience of high-level football in Europe. MLS loses without the best talent. They go down. The players go to Europe. They leave MLS, but you cannot have everything at the same time." That's an excellent point and something that I've been struggling with myself. Here's the second part of this answer. "I played in Washington, D.C. against the national selection in MLS. I watched the players. The team was very well organized. I watched the finals last year. It was enjoyable. I think a little push, not one David Beckham because that's not enough. More David Beckhams, why not? Bring coaches from Europe to give a push, why not? Why not? Why not reach a different level? The passion is there when you see the kids, when you see the girls. I see the passion of soccer is here, so why not reach a better level?" Now, that's obviously a simplistic view on the part of Mr. Mourinho and not exactly something we can just leap to overnight. I do think he has a point about bringing in more European talent. Now, obviously, the league itself is trying to hold back financially to make sure that it's solvent at every given point going forward, and especially as the economy has failed, there is a desire on the part of Major League Soccer to keep things in check, to make sure that budgets don't get out of control. So when you're talking about bringing in multiple players like David Beckham, that's just not cost effective. That's not feasible in terms of the money that's coming in. And we know that MLS is struggling with attendance this weekend. I'm not going to go into that. We've already talked about attendance in a different segment. But, you know, he does point to the passion, and there is a lot of passion. I just think that MLS has failed to market itself properly, and that not necessarily going to be multiple David Beckhams to make that to make the league popular on a level that will help bring in money to bring in more David Beckhams. It's a whole catch-22 situation. It's pretty much the whole issue of survival for soccer in the United States is this catch-22 of how can we bring in more. How can we bring in better players without more money? Well, how can we get more money unless we have better players? It's a circular effect. Not going to beat that drum today. Just wanted to talk about what Jose said. Second question here that Mr. Mourinho answered, what is MLS missing that could take it to the next level? Kind of a follow-up to the last one. "To be fair, I don't know. I think culture is very important, and I always make a comparison with Europe. If you go to Europe now with baseball, which is a huge sport for you, we don't do it. If you bring a huge baseball game to Europe, they won't exchange a baseball game for a soccer game, so culture is very, very important. And you have baseball and American football and basketball, and they aren't easy to compete with. But there are big communities of foreign people in love with soccer. Portuguese, Italians, Mexicans, South Americans. You have big communities in the U.S. in love with the game, and you must invest. Without investment, you don't attract people. It's not just about money, it's about the perspective of having an enjoyable future. When I was without a club, when I left Chelsea, I had a few possibilities to come to the States, and I was quite tempted, but in the end, I was thinking maybe I would miss the big football of Europe, and probably I was correct. And that was never, ever going to happen. I think that's just a little pat on the head from Jose, and I guess we can appreciate that for what it is. I like the fact that he's even mentioning that he considered it, which may have all happened for all of about 30 seconds. Here's the continuation of his answer. Probably that's the reason why Beckham came here with a big desire, and a few months later, he's very happy to play in Europe. Why? Because he was quite alone in his situation. I think the investment must not be focused on one player, but more players, in a way where every team would have two real players from Europe, not with controlled budget, not with financial walls, just free investment. Again, easier said than done, Jose, but we appreciate you banging that drum. Something else that I've been doing, something else that a lot of people around the soccer community have been doing. And while I say that a free market would benefit MLS, that's easy for us to say when we don't quite understand the ramifications, when we're not looking at the balance sheets that the league is holding. The continuation again. Bring two players for every team. Bring four or five coaches, responsible not just for their own teams, but responsible for coaching the program. People should come here, not with the objective of making money and going home, but with the objective of making an impact and helping soccer in a country where soccer is not a king. In Europe, soccer is the king, and they must realize that here our sport is not the king. People coming here must have the mentality of giving more than receive. More worry about giving and not going home with pockets full of money. I like how this is recreated, obviously, in Jose's direct words. Not quite the best English, which we appreciate, too, because that's part of Jose's personality. He's got a point again. You know, he's not going to say anything that's new to us. The people that watch soccer here, that are interested in soccer here, that are trying to make soccer bigger just by telling people how great of a game it is. And I think it's important for somebody of his stature, though, to look to give European players and coaches a bit of a smacking when it comes to don't come to the United States just for cash. If you're going to come over here just for cash, you're probably better off playing in a lower division in Europe or going somewhere else, because it's really not fair to our league and our fan bases that are attempting to make it bigger and better if you're going to come here for one last payday. This next question is a little interesting. Is Inter considering investment in an MLS franchise like FC Barcelona? We know what Barcelona was obviously involved in the Miami expansion attempt at first, and there's been word that they're interested in Philadelphia. Mourinho's answer. Inter Milan is in the beginning of a process, a global process. Barcelona is a club with a different vision. I worked with Barcelona from 1996 till 2000, and I know the club. It's a very well-organized club and has a certain kind of vision with the marketing and merchandising area. Absolutely amazing. I remember, for example, last year or 2 years ago, they were having training sessions in the middle of Hyde Park in New York. They know how to do it. Inter Milan is a more traditional club, a club more closed in itself, more closed to Italy. At this moment, Inter is in the beginning of a new era, a new phase, a new way of looking at things. To have a franchise? Why not? To be fair, why not? At this moment, that's not the phase for Inter. The phase for Inter is to do what Barcelona, Chelsea, and Man United did a few years ago. So this time will be the first time Inter is coming to the United States for a preseason camp. The preseason camp is the moment where players focus on training, on playing, on improving, but the structure of the club is doing the beginning of a process. Barcelona is not the club to compare with us because I know they're on a different level of organization. It's a big, long non-answer. I'm not sure that Josie would really know what was going on with any Inter investment anyway, but I think it's fairly clear that the Italian clubs are not the type of clubs that are going to come over here with an eye towards investing in the American game. And you guys know how I feel about branding American teams, MLS teams, with foreign brands. I'm not a big fan of that. So if Inter did come here, I would hope that they would do it the right way, put some money into a club, put some money into a development program, but not stamp a club in MLS as Inter St. Louis or Inter Ottawa or what? Well, not Ottawa, that's not America, but you know what my point is. And as for that, that's pretty much the That's pretty much what he talked about in terms of the United States. There's one more question about Inter's plans to go global. And like I said, as for Jose's involvement in anything that might be investment on the part of Inter Milan is debatable. I don't know that he would be privy to that information. Anyway, he was here just to pump up this tournament that's coming up in the summer while the international break kept the European teams from playing. It gave him a chance to come over here without interrupting his schedule. So it's just an interesting little sidebar to the American soccer discussion is Jose Mourinho in the United States talking about the game, talking about the United States and MLS and his views on it. And I think, like I said, I think he was fairly even-handed because he was attempting to be diplomatic. Whether or not those are his real feelings, his true feelings on the sport here, I think he's the type of person, and there are a lot of these people in Europe and around the world in major footballing countries who view the United States as kind of the kid brother on the block. They all want to pat us on the head and say, you're doing a good job, keep it up, encouraging us, that type of thing. And there is a place for that. I don't want us to be patronized, and I don't know that Mourinho was patronizing anybody. I don't think so. You don't really get that sense out of the interview that he was patronizing American soccer in general or MLS or anybody else. So it is what it is. It's just an interview with a world footballing figure who had a reason to be in the United States and made some comments that were directed that were pointed in the direction of American soccer and how the game is growing here. So now that we have Mr. Mourinho's opinions on American soccer, let's get to somebody who truly matters coming up in the next segment. Like I said, very special day for MatchFit USA. And for the podcast, Mr. Mark Fishkin will be joining us. Let me go ahead and give a little plug for his blog, thekinoffish.blogspot.com. Musings on American soccer by Mr. Fishkin. We'll get his voice on this very podcast when I come back. Welcome back to MatchFit USA Podcast number 7. Today, a seminal day in the history of MatchFit USA Podcast. Only 7 in, already welcoming in our first guest. Let me go ahead and introduce this man. He is the proprietor of The Kin of Fish, a soccer blog, Musings from Mr. Fish, soccer fanatic, covering both the United States men's national team as well as the New York Red Bulls, his local side up there in the New York, New Jersey area. How are you doing, Mark? Welcome into MatchFit USA Podcast.
I'm doing just fine, Jason. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining me. This is an excellent way for me to kind of bolster what I'm doing here, get some other opinions. First thing, we had just talked about this, but now that I'm recording, I think it's better to do it now. The U.S. I know that you were at the Red Bulls match yesterday.
Yes, I was.
And let me go ahead and get your impressions on that. I just, you know, I want to get up first.
Sure.
On the scene too.
Well, first of all, the fact that we lasted the first 30 minutes without giving up a goal, much less two, was certainly a huge benefit for us. Pecky didn't make the starting team, which, you know, whether it was because of his total howler against Montero last week or a knock he got in practice, it wasn't unwelcome. I mean, I think, you know, Red Bull was missing 6 starters. When you think about the folks that are away on duty, you think about Salatas, who's about to join the team for getting over his visa problems.
Right.
And when you consider that Conway is still sitting out his jungle warfare suspension, that was the supplement that he was taking over the counter that got him that suspension, mm-hmm. Along with Jeff Park. So mm-hmm. he was sitting out.
Right.
And after last week's debacle in Seattle, we do make gracious guests.
Yeah.
Nice to see them play with a bit of intensity. Matt Kanji showed a lot, and he had some great fancy footwork that kind of got the crowd a little bit jazzed.
Well, what I did see, he did look fairly impressive, and I think he's probably going to be fairly good for you guys this year.
Yeah, you know, we're hoping. I mean, when you know, Walenek hasn't seen the field yet, which isn't surprising. They jettisoned Mike McGee, who was always good coming off the bench.
Right.
You know, they signed Matt Canji on a loan from Atlanta last season, late in the season, and he didn't really have a terrific outing out there, but last year. But no, he definitely showed. I mean, you know, 180 minutes, and we haven't actually scored a goal on our own account yet. You know, the own goal was, of course, great to take a lead. Sitting with the ESC, it was terrific to get the whole crowd pumped up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a couple of chances to salt it away. I think we definitely had the better of the play than the Revs, but in true, you know, Metro Bull fashion, we found a way to send everyone home just a little disappointed.
Yeah, I did want to just touch on, not to be a negative, not to go to a negative here, and you guys got the point, and that, you know, you mentioned that you probably outplayed New England and probably deserved three, but you got a point, and it's not the worst way to start your home schedule. But I did want to ask about the crowd. The number I saw wasn't the best number, and I was just curious what the crowd was like. I mean, it is the home opener. You guys do have another year to go through before you get to Red Bull Arena.
Right. You know, I think the crowd was okay. It was, I think, 12 and change.
Right.
You know, you have to remember it's a busy sports weekend.
Absolutely.
B, it was a night that the weather was spotty up until kickoff. You know, I can make excuses about.
No, I do. I do think the weather had something to do with it. I noticed. There was a chance I was going to go to the United match. I didn't end up going, but I noticed that their crowd wasn't quite up to their standard as well. And I actually mentioned this, and I hadn't thought about it before the weekend, but there's a sizable Salvadorian population in D.C.
Yep.
A lot of those people are United fans. And I just wondered if, you know, we talk about club and country for players. There's a little bit of club and country for fans on a weekend like this when the MLS doesn't stop for the international break. And you've got, you know, you've got United States, El Salvador. A lot of American fans are going to – some will choose their club, but a lot of them are going to choose to watch that match, the World Cup qualifier. And the same goes for Salvadorians that are in this country who might otherwise go out and support their local club. I mean, like, I'm not familiar with, you know, New York or New England or any of those other places when something like this happens. But I know in D.C., with a Salvadorian population as large as it is and as passionate as they are about their soccer, that probably didn't help D.C.'s attendance.
No, I agree, and I think the fact that, you know, Mexico and Honduras were also playing their qualifiers at the precise
right
moment,
yep,
that those crowds are necessarily huge. I know it was I believe Colombia played at some point yesterday, but there's a huge Colombian contingent that the Red Bulls have been trying to reach. Anytime seemingly Ecuador and Colombia play a friendly just about every year,
mm-hmm,
at the Swamp, and they draw anywhere between 30,000 and 50,000 fans. So, yeah, you know, what can I tell you? Garber has been very, very outspoken about saying, listen, we don't control all our dates. We have to play at the same time. And, you know, the dates over the summer, I think they're doing their best to push the MLS games away. What are you going to do? I mean, the great thing to be a fan with a satellite dish on a night like last night was there was just a ton of great stuff out there. After the U.S. game, I came home and popped on Seattle and RSL, which, mm-hmm, was very fun to watch.
Right.
And I think Seattle really just could be the story of the league this year. I mean, the crowds, notwithstanding, I'd love to see how they perform on the road, but it doesn't appear as if they've broken a sweat yet. Casey Keller certainly hasn't broken a sweat. Well, and yeah, no, just it's a terrific story there.
Why don't we go ahead and touch on United States El Salvador? I know that you had a recent blog post about fishing for minnows, I believe was the title of the post, and the assumption, and I think it's a fair assumption on the part of U.S. men's national team fans, is that we should go into El Salvador and take care of business, and that this two-game set, El Salvador and Trinidad and Tobago, should be 6 points, and there's really no reason it shouldn't be. And now last night the result wasn't what the U.S. wanted, and now everybody starts making excuses for why that happened. I mean, I'm fairly not angry about it. I mean, it is a soccer match in the grand scheme of things, but I'm fairly disappointed, and I think that there are some changes that need to be made, and I just wanted to go ahead and get your thoughts. I know, like I said, I know you were at the Red Bulls game, but if you had an impression of how we played based on what you were able to see.
Yeah, no, listen, anytime you give up a relatively early goal against a nation that hasn't scored on you, much less taken a game off of you in 12 years, it definitely will set you a little back a little bit. And listen, let's be honest. We'd like to think that we have the swagger to walk into these Central American bandboxes and be impervious to the atmosphere that's there. But when there are, 30 to 50,000 Looney Tunes that know how to intimidate a crowd, even the best nations get intimidated.
Absolutely.
Not that we're the best nation. Listen, I give us a ton of credit for making the comeback. As a Red Bull fan, the notion that Josie came on and started making things happen was terrific.
Right.
I'm in awe of Frankie Haydock.
He's amazing. I mean, he almost single-handedly made that comeback happen last night. And he wasn't the strongest at the back at certain times. And I saw the point made. I don't remember who made it, but I saw the point made that what was he doing in the middle what was he doing in the middle when that ball came up for the header that El Salvador put in for the second goal? Why yeah. was he the one standing there? He got out-jumped, and that's really not Frankie's game anyway.
Nope.
But then on the other end of the field, I mean, he gets up the right side on one of those overlapping runs, and he puts a perfect cross on Josie's head, and next thing you know, all of us have hope again, and that was great to see. But there's give Bradley credit for making the changes that he did when he did. It was unfortunate that the second El Salvador goal came right before he made those changes. I mean, obviously those guys were already getting up and ready to come into the match, Josie and Jose Francisco Torres. And he made the changes, and it ended up getting a result out of the game. But at the same time, you wonder if Bradley properly prepared them for the environment, for those that maybe weren't emotionally prepared for it, didn't understand what it was. But there's players on that team, there are veterans on that team that know exactly what that is. They've been through the fire before. Why weren't they more of a calming influence on everybody else? I mean, you have young guys, you have Bradley and Kleshton on the field. But you have Beasley and Donovan and Hayduke, and there's a bunch of guys there that should know exactly what's going on. And I didn't understand why we were so rattled for the first 60 minutes.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that in the middle of this entire engine for the U.S. is Kleshton and Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget, Bradley is so precocious and he's delivered so well for us that the two of them, although they've been playing together in youth teams before, I mean, Kleshton is still kind of green to this sort of thing.
Right.
And when your D mid is getting a little shaky, the whole thing, kind of goes to crap. I mean, I was surprised that we didn't see Mastro.
Yeah. No, that's the question on everybody's mind with what happened in the middle of the field yesterday. So
yeah, and I mean, I know that Mastro is coming off a suspension, but he's our best shot that we've got at that position, and I probably would have started the second half with him. I mean, but that said,
so listen, you take Sasha out of the game and put Mastro Henning in there.
Yeah, I think he's a calming influence. I think he can really link well, getting the ball up through the center.
But that means you have to push Bradley higher then.
I would have no trouble with that whatsoever.
Okay, I'm not sure that Bradley's that comfortable up there most of the time. Or if he gets forward when he needs to, but most of his runs are there's a lot of junk. He puts himself in the right place at the right time. We've seen that with Heerenveen and with Germany, and he's done it a couple times for the national team. But it doesn't seem to be his game to kind of sit in the middle and make sure that things happen. I don't know how much we were supposed to rely on Sasha to do that anyway.
Yep. But listen, after two games, everyone, all six teams played two games. We're on top.
Yes. Important. That's an important
thing. I think it really says something that every one of the six teams have at least a point.
Right.
If I'm not wrong.
I don't have it in front of me, but I believe you.
Let's just take a quick look. I think that you know, going into this, yeah, every single team has at least 1 point.
Right.
I think should we come out of Wednesday's game with a victory, and I was at Toyota Park last summer for the 3-0 demolition of the Soka Warriors last summer, which was not close really at any point during the game. We'll be comfortable. We'll be playing on home soil with a pretty, I would hope, certainly a one-sided crowd. I don't know how large the crowd's going to be at Nashville.
We obviously seem to be a different side on home soil, so that should make a difference.
Everybody does.
Right. Very true. I mean, Mexico looked good against Costa Rica yesterday at home in Azteca when, you know, they couldn't do anything in Columbus, you know, last month. So, I mean, it is up and down. It's the nature of international football. So,
We're, like I said, you know, 4 points, top of the table. We're the only team with a positive goal differential.
Right.
And, you know, 7 points after three games is great. You know, you have to kind of fall back on the old adage that, you know, these games aren't for style. These games are simply for results. You know, 10 more minutes last night or 5 more minutes, and I think we certainly could have come out of there for 3 points.
That's funny considering there were 7 added minutes. I mean, but if there were 12 added minutes, we probably would have won that match, I guess. I mean, I don't know how much of that you saw, but that was one of the most ridiculous displays I've seen in a long time. And I mean, it's part of the game. It's the gamesmanship is to fall down as much as possible when you're up against a team you probably shouldn't be up against. When you're looking to get 3 points out of a match you probably didn't expect, or, you know, you couldn't realistically assume would be 3 points, and they were going down like they were shot, and it was frustrating watching the game from an American perspective, because every time that it seemed as if we were going to get something going again to have a shot to get back into the match or take the lead to, they kind of stopped the shenanigans after the game was leveled, but before that, every time it looked like the United States was building up a little bit of pressure, the you know, El Salvador would get into a 50-50 and there'd be a knock, and next thing you know, there's a guy on the ground. So,
well, shame on the Mexican ref for allowing it to happen. Well, and I guess since he didn't want to start doling out yellow cards for time wasting.
Yeah, you know, I think he did what he felt he could do, which was he did. I did see that. I think he gave out one yellow for a dive, and then he ended up, you know, adding on 7 minutes, which is a massive amount of time. You don't see that very often. So there was, you know, he was fairly even-handed, but it was definitely an interesting situation. I mean, the bottom line, we got a result when it didn't look like we were going to. So
certainly not. And like I said, all the other five nations would certainly love to be in our position right now.
Absolutely. All right, Mark, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with even more. Back with MatchFit USA podcast number 7, talking to Mark Fishkin. Okay, Mark, I know that you have an interest, just like I do, in the upcoming MLS CBA negotiations, what the players' union should be asking for. It's a major thing for the league to get bigger and better that the CBA can allow for a greater amount of money for the players in order to increase the level of quality throughout the league. I mean, all these things, blah, 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 down the line. We've all seen them listed. We've probably all talked about them at some point. So just to get your thoughts on what you expect between the league and the players' union.
Well, I mean, when you consider the fact that the league has made a number of multi-million dollar revenue gains over the last 4 to 5 years, every time a new team comes in, right, there's a huge influx of cash.
Right.
For the owners, this is where they're making up for their
initial
lost revenues, for their stadium investments, for taking on the operating losses of the franchises.
Right, operating in the red for the first however many years of the league. That's the sense you get, that the $40 million price tag on an expansion team, which I guess is kind of negotiable from what we hear with Vancouver and Portland, but that's partly coming in to pay back some of those owners that did take a loss.
Yep. When you consider the league this year took the step of shrinking the rosters, of increasing the minimum wage for the lowest paid guys on the scale, they're doing what they can, I think, to build a case that, listen, we're still not yet operating in the black in all markets, And we, you know, they're obviously going to try and stick the players with, I would think, if not a similar deal, a deal that you're not going to see the average salary in the league go from, you know, maybe 40 or 50,000 to 100,000 plus. Because until we have a league of 18 Seattles. You know, the gate just isn't going to make it happen.
No, and that's part of the reason the attendance is such a top of mind issue for me, and why I mentioned yesterday's attendance. But you know, there were a lot of mitigating factors yesterday, and so it's hard to really, you know, look at that and say, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. But as the TV deal is you know, a bargain basement deal for the league, they're finally getting paid for it, but it's not very much, and that's obviously not getting spread out across the league. There's not going to be enough cash to just go ahead and say, let's just jack up, you know, our salaries to get some better players in, because the money's not there. And I think that MLS fans have to remember that. They have to constantly tell themselves, I want better players in my league, but until the revenues merit the spending, it's just not going to happen.
That's right. It's not going to happen. And speaking to Eric Stover, the managing director of Red Bull, on my Red Bull Arena tour that I took late last week, he had mentioned that it really the Red Bulls in Giant Stadium, we only have one season left, but they lose money unless there are more than 20,000 paid fans in the stands.
And I know that the situation in D.C. is almost exactly the same.
That's right.
Right.
So, you know, when Red Bull Arena comes online next year, certainly for them it'll make a big difference, and I think for the league it'll make a big difference. You know, the league has been great, and I don't want to get too far away from the salary issue, but the league has been great in terms of retaining sponsors, in terms of selling shirt sponsorships, in terms of uniting the marketing behind both the league and the U.S. team, and they're doing everything they want. But when it comes to the players, you know, this is their shot, right? They signed this long-term deal. It was a five-year deal. I don't think anyone in the players' union or the league, I'm sure everyone hoped that the league would be in such a healthy state in comparison to other sports leagues, in comparison to its just, frankly, its own survival. But I think, you know, the players really do have a point to make to say, listen, you know, you're paying us, in some cases, the kids are making poverty line or below. They're bunking three to a condo near near the stadium or near the practice facility. And if we want to be taken seriously and we want to gain the respect of fans.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Danny Cipero made $12,900 last year.
Right. And in the kind of sports environment that exists in the United States, it's very difficult for MLS to have any kind of cachet with an average fan who looks at Major League Baseball and the NFL and even the NBA, definitely NBA and even hockey, and sees, you know, the average salary is a million plus. I mean, that we become jaded to those numbers very quickly, and it's unfair to put that on MLS when it's a brand new league and there's a lot of work to be done. But it's hard. I mean, it's a very catch 22, and I constantly use that term to describe what's going on, because it is the truth. You can't bring in more players without more money, but it's hard to get more money without better players.
Certainly. You know, I think as long as the mission of the league certainly is to survive, but also to help elevate the game of the young American player.
Absolutely.
You know, offering an enticing wage so kids like a Charlie Davies is, rather than heading over to Scandinavia, he's willing to kind of take a flyer in MLS and build his game. I mean, look at Josie. Obviously, he's a special
case.
And he, you know, did it the way I think that the league and the players' union would like him to take. To really go hone his craft, show that he's a skilled star, and then go for, you know, the big payday.
Right.
And I appreciate the fact that players like McBride and Casey Keller are coming back, and Eddie Lewis and Tony Sana and
Bobby Convey
and Landon Donovan.
Right. Bobby Convey.
Try and finish their careers, not in the case of Donovan, but in terms of the older set, to finish their careers in MLS. You know, but I think I can't imagine that anyone would like to see any sort of a work stoppage or lockout next year.
It'd be the death.
I don't think it would serve anyone's purpose to do that, the players or the owners. Knowing the Red Bull organization's luck, though, I can see that happening for opening day at Red Bull Arena.
You don't get down on it already. I mean,
we thrive on misery. It's what we've got. Yeah. But nevertheless, I'd love to see the two sides hopefully start negotiating in good faith as soon as the season ends.
You have to wonder about the players' bargaining position, though, in light of the fact that, you know, there's the gains have been modest, and that was probably going to be true no matter what. I mean, I don't think anybody expected, like you said, no one expected this to become, you know, a top four sports league in the United States overnight. But there's also the economic, just the general economic situation in the country and in the world that will affect their position. The league can always say, have you seen what's going on? Unemployment's at 7% or whatever it is. We can't, you know, we're getting less people in the stands because of this. So we can't afford to drastically increase anything or even, you know, moderately increase anything. And then what we end up with is the status quo for another 5 years. I mean, I don't know if they'll sign another 5-year contract, but
I'm sure they won't. And frankly, the status quo won't fly. I mean, the MLS is probably the most reasonably priced top-tier professional sports league in the country right now. You know, when you look at teams like the Mets and the Yankees who are in New York, who are just about to open these unbelievable stadiums, and I believe the Yankees want $2,500 for a seat right off the dugout for a 2-hour baseball game. And, you know, they'll start the game when you want to show up if you're willing to pay those prices. I mean, they are desperate.
Yeah.
At least in Red Bull Arena next year, they've told all season ticket holders that they're holding 2009 prices for 2010.
That's very smart.
But I think when you consider the price of going to an MLS match compared to Major League Baseball, certainly hockey, the NBA, football, don't even think about it. I mean, right. There really isn't a better deal for your 2 hours of entertainment than MLS. So I'm hoping that everyone has the league and the American soccer's best interest in mind when they talk about how they're going to make it go next year. But listen, when you consider the Adidas deal, which still has a number of years to go to outfit the league, when you consider the stadiums and the sponsorships and the teams, and you know there are more and more teams in the black every year, especially as the new stadiums come online, the players absolutely have got to have a piece of that. And I'd be surprised if you don't see the players make at least modest gains for the next CBA.
As part of the CBA, and I know people are interested in this, and whether or not, you know, obviously there's not going to be any major changes to the structure of the league. They're going to continue to stay single entity. More than, you know, 99.9% chance they continue to hold all the contracts at the league office. So there's not really going to be any major changes in that regard either, and I think a lot of MLS fans who want to go and stand on top of the mountain and scream about that fact as well might as well just stand, you know, might as well just accept it right now.
There are many of the world's top sports leagues in all sports that envy and admire the system that MLS has.
The problem with that, I mean, that's true, absolutely. But the problem with that is you're talking about the ownership and those folks running those leagues being envious, but the fans in those other countries. You know, they would scream bloody murder if they ended up in the same situation. If they're, you know, if there ended up being a salary cap, you know, of any significant, you know, any level that created parity in say the English Premier League, I think you would have, I mean, eventually people would get over it and return to that game, but you'd have a bloody revolt. So in the United States, we've become accustomed to salary caps because so many of our sports use them. But I think there is something to be said with, you know, as you mentioned, those other leagues, and from a business perspective, they envy the MLS and the way things are done. But for the average fan, they think that cuts into how the league competes, you know, in international competitions, or even just the quality of the league, and then how it's perceived around the world, and the whole thing down the line.
I think that's fair, but at the same time, I mean, I don't know about you, most Brits that I know, they have their favorite team among the top four. And then they have their favorite team, perhaps from where they grew up, watching the rest of the league.
Right, which is like a third division side.
It's a wonderful thing to have these big storied clubs. But at the same time, I mean, wouldn't we love to see Everton break through? Not a small club by any stretch, and win the league. Right. Wouldn't we love to see a Fulham, you know, break into the top four? And it's just not possible.
No, it's not. It's not a healthy situation. Absolutely not.
It's not a healthy situation. I mean, as a DC fan, Jason, I mean, you know, the first few years of the league, I'm sure, were fantastic for you. And I think it's great that we have clubs that have a history of success. The San Jose / Houston, DC, LA teams that when they were winning and repeating, I think were great for the league. But at the same time, you know, the NFL has figured out the magic formula, right, which is when the season starts, you know your team has got a shot. And when you think about the way that Major League Baseball does it, you know, when Pittsburgh has 16 straight losing seasons in a row, and when the Kansas City Royals get excited for their season, they'll be like, well, great, if we're good, we'll finish third.
What's amazing about Pittsburgh is they have 16 losing seasons in a row, and they managed to get a new stadium built. I still don't understand how that happened. I mean, MLS teams would die for a new stadium. I mean, Houston's having issues. I don't want to change the subject. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, listen, I've been a fan. My father took me to see the Cosmos play in Giant Stadium, and I got bit real young. And, you know, baby steps are what I constantly say to my non-soccer friends who, you know, understand and follow my devotion to the sport. And, you know, certainly there's some derision, but the fact is, it's like, listen, in 96, they would have, if they were, you know, the folks that started the league, Alan Rothenberg and the like. I mean, if you think, perhaps in their wildest dreams, they saw 18 teams in the U.S. and Canada, 10 stadiums, teams owning their own stadiums. And so, you know, it's a journey, not a destination.
Absolutely.
We just have to be patient, and it gets a little bigger and a little bit better every year.
It is absolutely the journey. It's a matter of perspective, and, you know, I constantly have to check myself and say, look, you know, I have to remember where things started and where things are going, and that it's not going to be, like I've said a couple different times, it's not going to be a quick fix or an overnight success or anything like that. So it's a slow burn, and I think those fans that are committed to the league should, you know, continue to try to get more people involved and show them what, you know, how fantastic things can be. And it's not always about comparing yourself to other leagues or other teams around the world. It's about enjoying and being passionate about your side for whatever reason you feel passionate about your side. I mean, it's the greatest thing about sports is you get, like you mentioned, you went to Cosmos games, you got bitten, and here you are continuing on talking about the game and trying to get your non-soccer friends involved to watch a match is enough. So I think there's progress, and hopefully the CBA comes together, like you said, in good faith, and things work out, and the players get more of a piece, and we can all kind of feel better about the direction continue to feel good about the direction that things are going.
Absolutely.
All right, let me go ahead and let's take a break, and we'll come back, and I'm sure you've got more because I know that I've got more. Okay, hold on one second. Finishing up with Mark Fishkin. I've taken up quite enough of his time. Is there anything else that you think we should be talking about, Mark?
Yeah, I think the last thing we wanted to talk about, Jason, was MLS marketing. I know that there's been a bit of hubbub with the lack of success down in Dallas, the way things are getting run down there. I'll tell you, here in New York, there was a marketing campaign that the folks at the Red Bull office did, where they had a bunch of kids dressed up in Red Bull outfits with horns and red painted faces running through the streets of Manhattan.
Right. They called that what exactly?
The running of the bull.
Ah.
and the when the videos of them were put up on the team blog at Red Bull's Reader, there was a significant amount of derision directed
naturally
at the campaign. Listen, traditionally, Alexi Lalas, in my mind, the one thing that he does most is draw attention to himself in the league. And in meeting when he was doing his New York GM stint, he said, listen, you know, we have to get adult fans into the stadiums. Mm-hmm. We have to be not an alternative to a kid's bowling party or going to Chuck E. Cheese.
Exactly.
Or to the MLS game. And I think that One of the things that, you know, certainly there have been some towns, some new markets that have been able to kind of jump the line and not really have to evolve their marketing messages. Toronto and Seattle, of course, have been massive successes as a serious adult sport. But I think that, on the whole, the league needs to get a bit smarter, especially with the older clubs, in continuing to maintain and aggressively market. And perhaps the message is simply, it's affordable, it's a great night out, you know, we all deserve to stand up and cheer for 90 minutes kind of thing.
Yeah, there's a balancing act. I think a lot of those teams are still stuck in that 90s mentality of, you know, soccer mom and the kids come out for a good night of family fun. And I don't know that that you can completely discount that market and say, you know, we don't want to pay attention to them anymore. They're always going to be kids that are involved in the game in the United States because it, you know, largest participation sport and all that stuff. They're going to want to go out and watch the game, and you have to figure out where your line is. Now Toronto's gone the complete opposite direction. They're not catering to that group at all, and it doesn't seem that. Well, Seattle maybe. I don't. I know about the scarves, and we know about some other things that they're doing, but I haven't heard necessarily about the family fun aspect. And you mentioned Dallas, and Dallas has issues, from what I hear from people I know down there, where they're putting their supporter section right next to their kids zone. And, you know,
a huge mistake.
Oh, absolutely a huge mistake. And you have to figure out, you know, what you're going to be and focus on that and maybe, you know, give a little bit to the other side. So, you know, that's the balance that the league, those older teams have to find.
Yeah, and it really is as much the marketing as the game experience as well. I mean, the Crafts certainly have figured out that they can run a successful club on pretty much a shoestring. Up at Gillette Stadium, they only open one half of the bleachers, one half of the stands, so the entire game-attending audience basically stares at the field and then the other side of the stadium, which is empty and has tarps all over it.
Yeah.
Well, as long as they don't wonder why attendances remain kind of static and down from the early days of the team when the team was awful, but nevertheless they had drew significantly more fans than they do now. Listen, it's a really fine line for these front offices. Most of them are run on a shoestring. They have tiny budgets. In the case of New York, the local media outlets barely cover the team. But we have 9 other pro teams here
right
in the market, and 6 of them are playing right now, and 2 of them, their seasons are about to start.
I think that's a fairly common situation around the league, not just in New York, but go ahead.
That's right. And so, you know, one of the things that I know they're doing in Red Bull Arena is they're putting the media directly at field level. They're giving them some of the best seats in the house in an effort to entice more media coverage and get people a little more excited about it. I think, you know, the stadium here, and I'm sorry to continue going back to it, we're a little excited about
it. Oh, no, you have a complete right to. In fact, I'm excited about it. I'm, you know, 2 hours south, and I think Red Bull Arena has a great chance to be kind of a, you know, a shining star for the league next year. So let's go ahead and wax poetic.
It'll reboot the league in the New York market.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you. I mean, it really will. So like I said, you know, they have to focus on game experience. For the marketing teams with a tiny, tiny little budget, they have to not only reach out to the youth audience, to the Hispanic audience in the market, and also the adult audience. So it's bar nights are increasingly important, getting the players out during the week to do marketing if and when they can. I think, you know, for those youth teams, I think each player should be adopted by a local school, elementary school or high school, to get folks jazzed about that. You know, one of the things that Drew Carey said in his media tour running up to the opener at Quest last week was, you know, when we do halftime in most of these stadiums, it's little kids playing soccer. Well, you know, we're not interested in that here. You know, that's one of the reasons why they had their marching band.
Right.
Which, you know, take it or leave it, a marching band in a soccer stadium, a little different.
But it's unique, and it connects the, you know, the community feels like, oh, we've got a marching, you know, nobody else has one of these, and, you know, it's a whole thing.
That's right. So, you know, I wouldn't envy a lot of these people that are in the sports marketing offices here. It's definitely a stepping stone to folks who either want to stay in the sport or go into the larger sports marketing world. And they're doing their best with what they can. You know, the key is, in my mind, is really reaching out to that fan and his 20 and 30-something friends that
Absolutely.
Maybe they played in high school or college. Maybe they spent some time overseas. How do we get them to the stadium?
Yeah, so, I've mentioned it on the blog a couple different times. I think the future of the league, to a certain extent, is in that young urban professional kind of vibe. I mean, you look at what Toronto's been able to do, and I think that's a large part of the group that fills that stadium. I'm sure there's some other groups there, but you're talking about it becomes the thing to do. And I know that's not an easy sell. You can't just say, oh, look, we've got soccer. It's the thing to do. Come to our match. But if you're creative about it, if you drum up the right kind of anticipation for the season. I mean, I'm not in marketing, so I don't want to besmirch anybody that's, like you said, attempting to do that on a shoestring budget. But you have to wonder sometimes, with the way that some of these teams do this, whether or not they're hiring somebody directly out of school that doesn't even understand soccer at all. Or, you know, that's why I wonder if there's a problem there, if there's a disconnect between the marketing departments and their audience.
Well, when you talk about the players getting paid certainly below market value, you know, a lot of these folks are young kids. They're incredibly energetic. They're giving up their nights and weekends, and they're hoping to make a career out of it. And so we really shouldn't get too down on them. We just hope that as all the boats rise with more money for players, and hopefully more money for marketing, and hopefully the media starts to pay more attention.
Yeah, the media sell, that's a tough one. And you know, there are a couple of places around the country that seem to have, you know, everybody's got their one or two guys that are interested in the game, and from what I can understand by people that have done a little bit of media work, they say that, you know, a lot of these guys do the soccer as an unpaid side job. I mean, their main job is college basketball or hockey or whatever else. And I know that's true in D.C. here. There's a couple of different guys. Steve Goff is one of them. Everybody knows Steve Goff. I don't believe that he's making much money off of the soccer thing, and he's kind of one of those media stalwarts that continues to push the game, and he's not writing for SI, and he's not writing, you know, for Goal.com or any of those big sites. He's doing it because DC does have a strong soccer community, and it's very tough.
And let's find a house for him too, so they can play their games.
DC,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's a whole another issue. I haven't quite gotten into the politics of the situation, but it's not looking too good.
We'll save that for next time, perhaps.
No, absolutely. we could fill up a whole podcast with that, and I'm sure anybody that listens to this that's from DC has their own opinion. There's a lot of good DC podcasts, by the way, and I need to get a little bit more into that. But as for the marketing situation, you know, shoestring budget, small amount of money to kind of spread around to try to figure out things to do. That's in my mind. That's why it makes it even more important to be as unique as possible with what they're doing. And I think that there are some teams that are taking those steps. And I know just even trying to sell tickets in our current economic situation and all that stuff. I know, you know, you mentioned New England and the problems with how they put their crowd in the stadium, but they did have the season ticket deal for the Fort. So that, you know, those kind of things are always good to see, because they show that, you know, one of the things I say is that the sport needs the atmosphere more than any other sport in this country. And because it's on such a lower level in terms of the public consciousness, and atmosphere makes for good television watching. I mean, who wants to watch a match when there's nobody in the stadium?
Yep, absolutely.
So, you know, I think it's important for these teams to try to fill their stadiums, not no matter what the cost, because obviously that helps pay their bills and they have to make some money off of it. But really, what's the benefit of putting 6,500, for example, in Pizza Hut Park? What really are you making? I mean, if you're selling the tickets for, you know, I don't know what the average ticket in Dallas is, $25, let's say. You know, if you went out and you sold a season ticket package like New England did for $200 for the season or whatever that is, and made it even more cost effective. As you mentioned, soccer, MLS is perfectly positioned as the most bang for your entertainment buck in terms of sports that you can get. With baseball and football and everything else, that those are serious investments, and there are a lot of people that love sports that can't even come close to affording one or two games a year for those big time sports, that could afford to go to 8 matches for their local MLS side.
Absolutely.
All right, I think I've taken up enough of your time, Mark. I very much appreciate you joining me.
Well, it's absolutely been a pleasure, Jason, and the blog is great, and the podcast series is great, and I'd love to come back and do it again sometime.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Great.
Well, that's another MatchFit USA podcast in the books. Once again, I have to thank Mark Fishkin for joining me today. It was a fantastic exercise getting somebody to actually talk to on this podcast. You guys know that I've been frustrated with filling up the entire thing myself, and this was a great experience. Once again, thanks to Mark Fishkin. His blog is thekinoffish.blogspot.com. Please go check that out. Whether you're a Red Bull fan or not, he's got great insight on the game and can completely add to everything that I do at matchfitusa.blogspot.com. They go hand in hand. Thank you guys for checking out the podcast this week. We'll be back next week, hopefully with another guest. Got a couple different ideas lined up. Should be fantastic. Have a good one, and enjoy the U.S. versus TNT on Wednesday. I expect that we should get a better result than we did on Saturday night against El Salvador. Being at home in front of a home crowd, hopefully our young guys will play better. And let's cross our fingers for that and move on in this hexagonal, still atop the standings. That'll do it for MatchFit USA Podcast number 7. Thank you guys again. See you next week.
MatchFit USA, examining the state of American soccer.